7 national championships. That's more than any coach that has ever done it, Coach Saban. Are you even able to process what that means?
Not really. I'm just happy that we won tonight. And I really haven't thought about that because you're always looking forward. And I just love this team so much and what they've been able to do. I can't even put it into words.
No college football season has ever looked like this one. But the ending in last night's national championship game was deeply, deeply familiar. Today, Spencer Hall joins us to break down Alabama's historic win, Nick Saban's immortality, and what this strange year has taught a stubborn sport about itself. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, January 12th. This is ESPN Daily. Spencer Hall, it is 11:58 p.m. Eastern. We just saw Alabama win the national championship by a score of 52-24. We just saw Nick Saban being carried like in Dirty Dancing by Landon Dickerson, his center, as the confetti rained. How would you even begin to describe what we just saw?
You're pretty much seeing the best college football team you'll ever see.
Spencer Hall is part of the SEC Network's Thinking Out Loud, and he's been writing about college football for 15 years.
I thought that this was the most dominant performance I had seen since watching USC dismantle people back in the mid-aughts, which is probably not a coincidence because the offense back then was run by Steve Sarkisian, the current offensive coordinator for Alabama, and I think Texas coach as of 5 minutes ago. I thought that, you know, yeah, sure, this totally looks like, you know, USC. USC did that for 3 or 4 years running before they eventually fell off and Pete Carroll went to the Seattle Seahawks. Alabama's been doing this for about 5 or 6 years straight in this particular variation. And Nick Saban has won 7 national titles. 6 at Alabama, and including the one that he got at LSU. 7 overall. I mean, he surpassed Bear Bryant for total championships. That's what you're seeing. You're seeing the best to ever do it with, I believe, his best team.
Did Ohio State even have a chance in this game? Because the way the night started, it started with news that Ohio State was missing several key defensive starters. They lost their star running back, Trey Sermon, after one play. Was this sort of faded from the jump?
I don't think they had a great chance. I don't want to say it was impossible. But it probably got impossible the minute that we looked up and realized that they couldn't cover DeVonta Smith one-on-one.
First and goal, Jones on the run, and it's just too easy for DeVonta Smith as he just adds to his records and milestones.
DeVonta Smith is the most important player in this football game. He has over 200 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns, and he did not play in the second half.
I mean, he disappeared into a tent, Spencer, and we did not see him again. And I looked at the stats and I was floored that, oh, right, yeah, he is like as good as anyone we have ever seen. That seems to be statistically verified in half of a game.
In half of a game. Their best player only needed a half a game to put it completely out of reach.
Jones steps up right down the middle of the field. It's touchdown. DeVonta Smith cannot be stopped. A truly special performance by the Heisman Trophy winner. 3 touchdowns in the first half.
That's how good this Alabama team was. I mean, you know, you could say, oh, that's unfair. I'd really like to root for the underdog. Why don't you appreciate a bully? Appreciate a well-constructed, perfect terminator of a bully while you get to watch it and while you don't have to tackle anybody on the field.
I want to understand DeVonta Smith better, Spencer. How did Alabama find space for him to operate as he did? How are they so effective using him basically at will, it looked like?
The thing that is mind-blowing about him, they use him in space and they use him in space close to the goal line. That's the most congested part of the field. When you get down to that area, space is at a premium. Devontae Smith, because of everyone else being such a threat, including Najee Harris, who was able to produce all night long thanks to Alabama's truly massive offensive line, he was able to open up space for receivers. Those receivers have to be covered one-on-one. Eventually, the hard truth of Alabama's offense is this. Somebody's got to cover Devontae by themselves. Mm. And what they'll do is they'll run him along the full length of the field, both vertically and horizontally. There are not many people who can keep up with him one-on-one. And the guy assigned to that for most of the game, Sean Wade, I don't think he was at 100%. And even at 100%, Devontae Smith is going to be a challenge. So when they started doing that, opening up space, running him side to side, and daring people to keep up with him, no one could.
Yeah, it felt like 120% may not have been enough against Devontae Smith tonight. I mean, Spencer, when we zoom out on him and we try to evaluate where he fits into this gallery of all-time great receivers in college football history, the first Heisman winner at receiver since Desmond Howard, where does he fit in?
I might even go back further than Howard. I mean, you might have to go back to Tim Brown to get somebody who really has the same profile. Howard was always kind of a hybrid, and that's not what people will think of Devontae Smith. When he goes to the draft, it will be pure receiver, and looks like it too. He is that much of a mold breaker that we took the Heisman, which has been an award for primarily quarterbacks for the last decade or so, mixed in with some running backs, and we went back and expanded it to an entirely different position because that's how vital he is on the field. And watch him too, like just a blend of power, speed, technique. He's the next step in the evolution of what they look for at receiver until they get the next guy who might even be better than Devontae Smith. We don't even know who that is yet, but the terrifying thing is they're out there, and if you look at the recruiting rankings, they're probably going to Tuscaloosa.
So I don't want to overlook his quarterback here, Mac Jones, who was a guy that a lot of people had reasonable doubts, I think it's safe to say, about coming into this year. I mean, it seemed like for a time maybe his ceiling was like A.J. McCarron, but he threw for 5 touchdowns tonight. And you mentioned Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, already. How are you apportioning credit here? How much credit does Mac Jones deserve in all of this?
Mac deserves a lot, and because Mac is, I think, as good a distributor of the ball. He throws a good deep ball, like a really nice deep ball, but he throws it when it has been, when it is open. I don't think they force many deep balls. I can't think of one. I've watched every Alabama game this year, and really the only deep balls I saw forced were in the Arkansas game when Arkansas dropped 8 or 9 all game long. So you're just throwing into a rush hour crowd on every single snap. And that was, by the way, Mac Jones' worst game. And I didn't see a whole lot of that. Ohio State did some weird things defensively tonight. At one point, poor Tough Borland, a linebacker, was matched up on Devontae Smith.
You want to talk about a tough ask? Tough Borland, a middle linebacker, running on a seam route with a Heisman Trophy winner who's had a career night.
That shouldn't happen, and it did, but... But Mac Jones is a great decision maker with the ball, who has really great touch and knows exactly where to put it. Also, credit to both Steve Sarkisian and Mac Jones for the same thing. Don't screw it up. You don't need to overthink much when you're this talented. That's the best offense you can have and the best quarterback you can have are people who are throwing and scheming to people who are better than the guys who are lined up against them. That is Alabama's great advantage.
I want to ask you about Alabama's defense, because Ohio State was not a slouch entering this game. I mean, the last time we saw Justin Fields, he was blowing out Clemson, and Justin Fields' favorite target, Chris Olave, he was kept in check after torching Clemson a week ago himself. How did Alabama solve the Buckeyes' offense tonight?
Well, the first thing, it was solved for them with the injury to Sermon, who'd been playing so well. Master Teague at running back, I just don't think he's quite as physical between the tackles. Sermon just hits like a truck, and that tends to add up over time. Also, when you switch personnel, there's just a different rhythm. to everything you're doing, including pass protection. So I don't think that helped in terms of rhythm. One of the things they did with Olave is they just played really well against him one-on-one. That gets to a point that I want everybody to know, which I understand everyone believes Nick Saban is a defensive genius. Nick's not going to make it any harder than it has to be either. This season, they really didn't throw because I think it was a young secondary and still developing. This season, they didn't throw a whole lot of, you know, famously exotic Bill Belichickian kind of garbage at quarterbacks to confuse them. They played a lot of straight up man. That serves two purposes. One, it keeps things very simple and leans on the talent aspect of the advantage you have over everybody. Because sure, maybe you schemed a guy open, right? Maybe you did something tricky where suddenly I got a wide receiver. Talent's going to prevent that most of the time because you simply can't get this sticky, fast, mean, pesky cornerback off of you.
Spencer, this is Saban's seventh national title, six at Alabama, one at LSU, and that is apparently not just the most ever. The other 129 current head coaches in college football apparently combine for six national championships. So What does all of this math, what does this season tell you about Saban?
That he is the best coach to ever do it. In an age and an era where things are harder to do than they ever have been before. The level of competition is higher, players are bigger, they are faster, there's more money sloshing around the sport than there ever has been before. After this year, I can say no one has ever done it like he's done it, and no one ever will. And the only thing that's really going to stink about this for Alabama is when he eventually, and yeah, it has to happen, the dude eventually has to retire. The hangover and the decline off this, don't think about that yet, Alabama fans, if you're listening. Everyone else, if you want to just soak that in and sort of get the only revenge you're going to get against this program, which is the next time they lose in like a year and a half to some mobile quarterback we've never heard of who scares the crap out of all of the DBs, you know? Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Take that. You know, that's all you're going to get. Take that and the sweet satisfaction that, you know, time comes for all of us. And eventually Nick Saban will have to retire and watch the ducks at the lake, as he is fond of saying.
All right, Spencer, coming up, I want to talk to you about this incredibly bizarre college football season and how what we saw this year may impact what you would personally like to see from the sport.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Spencer, when we talked back in late September, approximately 900 years ago, the SEC was just beginning their season, and neither of us, it's safe to say, were pretty optimistic about the prospect of this football season really even being completed, but we made it. The car is sort of missing a wheel, and the top may have been sheared off at one point, but we're here. What is your assessment of this college football season now that it's over? Does it deserve to have like an asterisk by it? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think you can think of it as a standard season. If you're a person who can look at this and say, nope, everything was totally normal, then I really question your grip on reality. That's not how any of this felt to me, and it's certainly not how any of it looked. Week to week, not only did you have to worry about cancellations and you had to worry about testing and you had to worry about whether games were even going to happen. Once they did happen, it was painfully clear that these were not full teams. These were not teams at full speed. And that only got worse the deeper we went into the season. There were points in the season where, you know, they'd say, oh, hey, we have only got, you know, 55 players. We've only got 48 players dressing out for this game. Those numbers kept getting lower and lower and lower.
Mm.
Football's a sport of immense roster attrition from injury alone. Throw in COVID positives and everything else that a pandemic entails, along with the standard injuries, and you really got a much fainter and thinner version of the sport. If you don't want to put an asterisk on it, if you don't like to think of it in terms of records, just check your gut. It was different. It's okay to admit it's different. It would be the accurate thing to admit that this was a different season.
Yeah, it did feel surreal and alien and all of those things. And maybe the way to impose some normalcy on this, Spencer, is for me to ask you a very sports talk question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who was the biggest winner in all of this? When you zoom out on this season and you look at the major stakeholders, who was the biggest winner of this entire experiment?
Everybody who already had everything they needed. The haves are very clear in the sport, and the have-nots are many. And I think during the pandemic, the idea was whoever had the most resources was going to get out of this and probably end up winning stuff. Well, the programs with the most resources are Alabama and Ohio State. And who ended up in the playoff title game? Well, you had Alabama and Ohio State, who had rosters deep enough to survive all of the like postponements and injuries and opt-outs and what have you. They had that. And they ended up with the chance for a title at the end. So I think that's what I took away. Like, who won in this? I mean, I don't know if Nick Saban would necessarily call this year a universal win, but they got a little richer. And so did Ohio State, and so did all of the other teams that, you know, the 6 to 8 teams that we can legitimately call title contenders.
In September, Spencer, when we talked and I asked you what the college football playoff would maybe look like many months into an uncertain future, you said this.
If you said, okay, hey, it's going to be Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, and I don't know, you can pull a wild card from like Texas. Okay, Texas ends up making it. Somehow. Okay. Doesn't that look a lot like, you know, any year between now and 1995? Kind of looks a little bit like that. So we'll have a lot of controversy. We'll end up with something that, ironically, and against the rest of 2020, looks like college football.
The first thing that I think of now is like Texas. I mean, was that just like you avoiding picking Notre Dame at that point?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Okay.
Not many people are going to just openly admit that, but you know, I have a longstanding 30-year-old personal beef with Notre Dame that has nothing to do with football, and I'm not going to let it go. I've just learned this about life. You should cling to some grudges, especially the irrational ones that don't really hurt anybody. Nobody at Notre Dame is going to be hurt by me going, I want your football team to lose all the time. Because you know what? It's not going to happen. And I couldn't influence it anyway. So yeah, that's why I chose Texas.
The real question I want to ask here is that, given that you nailed that prediction pretty well, and given that like, we're getting the same four teams thereabouts that we are used to seeing in the playoff year after year, even in this season of extreme insane chaos. Is college football on some level just broken?
It's been broken, and it's always been like this. Like structurally, this is the way the sport has always been. Back when this was a plaything of ruffian Ivy Leaguers, It started as a sport of the elites, of the exclusive elites. And
yes,
as it expanded, that structure never really changed. It just moved locales. The names might change slowly. You won't see the Miami Hurricanes in the running for a national title anytime soon for a lot of different reasons. But for a long time, they were a standing power. Nebraska had a stretch of 20 years where, you know, they didn't, it's not just that they didn't lose, but that they didn't win fewer than 9 games under Tom Osborne. those kind of long stretches of dominance, those are the norm here, right? And those, that kind of power structure, it's in the DNA of the sport. It's in the layout. It's in the history. So is it a broken sport? Yeah, it's somehow has managed to be this popular while being broken the whole time. It's not even a matter of parity. You'd like to establish a nice oligarchy, because as it stands right now, I don't even know if it's that inclusive.
So if the NCAA, Spencer, were to invite you to one of their secretive mahogany paneled rooms in Indianapolis, and they were to ask you to help them fix this, what are you telling them?
If conferences could take scholarship numbers, and scholarship numbers were governed by where you placed, that is the closest thing we might be able to do to get roster parity of some sort. Okay. Vandy has an awful, awful year. Okay. Vandy gets a couple of extra scholarships, right? Available. And then you take some away from Alabama. I know this will never happen because you're proposing taking something away from Alabama or from Ohio State. The powers that be would never, ever go for this.
Spencer, we are at the end of the road here, and I just want to know what your lasting memory is going to be of this college football season and all of its weirdness.
I would love to remember something as majestic as Devontae Smith running past a flailing Tough Borland for a wide open TD. I would love to remember that, but my enduring memory of this season, and not just because I am a Florida fan, will be of Florida Gators cornerback Marco Wilson taking a shoe, throwing it a full 20 yards downfield, giving LSU new life and a chance at a 57-yard field goal kicked in fog by Cade York. 57-yarder in fog to win on the road.
Before you leave, Spencer, as we try to peer through the mists ahead to next season, what are you seeing in your crystal ball?
I think you will see something like everyone realizing how strange the 2021 season, right? The 2020 to 21 season. You won't understand how strange it was until we kick off to what feels like a normal season. Normal will feel so bizarre. Every stadium will seem 10 times louder than it did before. And you'll just think, yeah, now I get it. Now I get how much we lost and how absolutely bizarre that entire season was. I also think this college football playoff will be Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Notre Dame.
Spencer Hall, thank you for staying up late with us on ESPN Daily.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, up next. Bill Belichick may not be going to the White House this week, but it's worth discussing all the people in sports who already did.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. Last night, Bill Belichick announced that he's declining the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Donald Trump, citing freedom and democracy, and vaguely alluding to the terrorist attack by Trump supporters on the Capitol. The greatest football coach of all time had been sucked into another White House news cycle, and that was the latest evidence of a familiar trap. For the last 4 years, a faction of Americans, Trump included, has been loudly lamenting the refusal of so many to stick to sports. But the truth is, nobody has injected politics into athletics more intentionally than our 45th president. Trump has routinely told athletes and owners and coaches and fans what they should or should not say or do, effectively daring sports to ignore the most powerful human being in the world. And how Trump has used the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor in America, is proof. Last Thursday, one day after Trump encouraged an angry mob to head to our Capitol and fight the results of our democratic elections and take the country back, the president took the time to give the Medal of Freedom to two golf legends, Gary Player and Annika Sorenstam, who accepted at the White House as scheduled. In fact, of the 24 Medals of Freedom that Trump has bestowed, a staggering 14 have gone to sports figures. That is nearly 60%. No other president even comes close. Trump has given the medal to Player and Sorenstam and Babe Ruth and Babe Didrikson Zaharias and Lou Holtz and Alan Page and Roger Staubach and Jerry West and Bob Cousy and Dan Gable and Mariano Rivera and Jim Ryan and Roger Penske and Tiger Woods. It is one hell of a roster, even without Bill Belichick. And it is one hell of a reminder how this president made it so hard for anyone to just stick to sports. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.